broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendrick.
According to preliminary information still to be confirmed,
we in New York are Jews and Christians.
I have a 13-year-old in the 7th grade, a 12-year-old in the 6th grade.
I got a letter saying that I need to take my flag down.
Hang in there, honey.
F you.
Famous Phil Hendrick Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast with a news, talk, and information and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we'll go anywhere and do anything to get at it. Every night. And the right arm of our great radio show, of course, is our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. You simply must join us there every night as we have live streaming video of our show and live streaming audio of our show, and we have the downloads of each show next day. You can also access a 5-day video archive, and we have hours and thousands and billions of hours of archive material. We have archives of our webisodes, archives of our animated projects, and we have a news feed and a comment section and a guaranteed email response from me, and it never ends, man. The good stuff don't end, you know.
Yeah.
So join us at philhendryshow.com. Now this, you know what, man? I forgot. I wanted you to get me to Fight Bell, bud.
Well, hold on. I can, if you want me to.
Well, it's now everybody knows that we're going to get the Fight Bell because we're going to inaugurate a feature here. I don't know whether we're going to be inaugurating a feature here or whether it's something that, if you've got the Fight Bell, go ahead and lay it on me. Go ahead and lay it on me. That's a fart.
Well, I can't.
Anyway, this is our story of the night. Body of woman missing for 4 months. Guess what? Found buried under pack rat clutter. Now, that's got to be some kind of a, if not a first, that's got to be a first for the 21st century. It's got to be a first for a first world country. Maybe not. Well, listen to this story and you tell me. A 4-month search for a missing Las Vegas woman came to a ghastly end this week. 4 months now, understand? You can well imagine what that means. A 4-month search for a missing Las Vegas woman came to a ghastly end this week when her husband found her corpse in their home amid a labyrinth of squalor that had been impassable even to search dogs.
Man.
Oh, God. Bill James apparently had no idea that the body of his pack rat wife, Billie Jean, was under the same roof as he helped police scour the home in the Nevada desert for any sign of her.
Wait a minute, man. Wait, hold the phone. The guy's wife missing.
Yes.
And they found the guy's wife in a house.
Yes. Let me finish.
It's nuts.
Then he's looking for the woman. He had no idea that the body of his pack rat wife, Billie Jean, was under the same roof as he helped police scour the home in the Nevada desert for any sign of her. Then he spotted the feet of the body poking out of a floor-to-ceiling pile of junk Wednesday, revealing in shocking detail the woman's penchant for hoarding.
Wait a minute, man. This is stuff she collected.
Yes. Police say they searched the home several times, even using dogs. Well, guess I think there's some dogs that need to be fired.
No, no kidding.
I think those...
Well, man, you can't blame the dog.
No, I'm blaming the dogs. Cadaver-sniffing dog? No. Fire the dogs. We now know that the dogs are no good.
No, man, you can't say that. You don't know.
Yeah, I know. I fully well know. We're looking for a body. Really? Yeah, where is it? And who's this husband? Anyway, let me just read this. Police say they searched the home several times, even using dogs from a unit that helped locate bodies at Ground Zero after September 11th and Hurricane Katrina. But they were unable to find the body of the body amid the piles of clothes, knickknacks, trash, and other junk. For our dogs to go through that house and not find something should be indicative of the tremendous environmental challenges they face, police spokesman Bill Cassell said. And the fact that these dogs are no good. I'm kidding. They're probably fine. I don't know what the house smelled like. Clark County Coroner's Office spokeswoman Jessica Coloma said it would take weeks to determine when and how the 67-year-old woman died. The husband has been cooperative throughout the investigation and quickly notified police of his discovery. One thing is not in doubt about the case. Billie Jean James loved to hoard. It's a behavior that has received new attention this year with two popular reality TV shows, Hoarding, Buried Alive.
No, man, they got a name like that? It's telling us an old lady going to die.
No. I don't know, but I mean, it's quite, you're right, it is very synchronistic that there is a, what are you looking at?
What do you mean synchronistic?
It's like coincidence, but it's more than coincidence. It's almost like a coincidence that's meant to be.
That's what?
Synchronistic, synchronicity.
Oh, that's interesting.
Thank you.
I don't read that. How do you spell it?
Look it up, bud, okay?
S-I-S-Y.
Now I forget where I was.
You're talking about Hoarding, Buried Alive.
Hoarding, Buried Alive, and Hoarders. These are two TV shows, two reality TV shows that have been produced in recent months. The idea of pack rats, of hoarders, of people that collect all this crap, you know, just crap, man. Just crap. Just mounds of crap. Of course, I call it crap. Where would we be were it not for the hoarders? I'll bet you the some of our greatest archaeological digs was the result of some, like, cat in 3000 B.C. hoarding something, you know.
Probably.
Anyway, a similar situation could be seen at the James home in a desert front cul-de-sac near the Las Vegas Strip. It was the James home in a desert front cul-de-sac near the Las Vegas Strip. In the driveway sits two large trash bins that require industrial-sized trucks to haul them away. The front patio is filled with knickknacks, including old chairs, smaller trash bins, and a 10-foot basketball hoop. Well, wait a minute. If she doesn't throw anything away, what do they need a trash bin for?
I was just going to say that. That's a lie. That's a filthy lie. If they had trash, that means she don't collect everything.
They must have had the trash bins there to haul the crap out of there after they found the old lady's body buried under it. Do you think then maybe they'll throw some stuff away?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it may have sentimental value.
What?
The stuff that the lady's under.
Sentimental value? What are you talking about, sentimental value?
If the guy, if the guy wants to, it may have, might remind him of her. Because now she's dead, too.
The stuff she was buried under?
Yeah.
Why would a guy want to keep the stuff that his own wife was buried under for sentimental value?
Because that was what she was buried under.
Yeah. And plus, people like stuff for sentimental value. Probably remind him of her, you know, the fact, not because she is buried under it, or maybe it was like a menu of a restaurant they went to, and she happened to be buried under it.
I'm telling you right now, I don't give a damn if it was a menu that, you know, we'd been to a restaurant with. If it was someone that I loved and they were buried under that crap, I'd get all that crap out of there so fast, I'd have a bonfire. A bonfire.
Well, maybe you're not sentimental.
Sentimental? Are you guys high? Oh, I want to keep that. You mean the stuff your wife was buried under? And what does this mean, buried under, anyway? What happened, you know?
I bet you she was looking for something, like maybe, you know, the TV guide, and it fell on her.
The TV guide, huh?
Yeah.
Don't you think she'd keep the
What?
She'd keep the TV guide closer to where she's sitting, man, to watch the TV. She ain't got it in a stack of crap. Anyway, sentimental value.
Might be.
Anyway, inside, Cassell said James' piles of clutter left just small pathways to walk and strong odors that hindered their search, generated by, animals, decomposing garbage, food, clothes, and other stuff. If there had been any indication that there was a remote possibility that somebody was back underneath that stuff, we would have taken the appropriate action, Cassell said. Sari Connolly, who walked dogs with James and her husband daily at a nearby park with a group of friends, said the woman bought things at thrift stores each day and accumulated them in the house. She became the hoarder person, and she wouldn't let anyone come in the house, this young lady Connolly says. Connolly said one of Billie Jean's closest friends once asked to use the bathroom at the home after a camping trip, but James wouldn't let her come in. Hmm.
Where'd she go?
Who?
The friend.
I don't know where she went.
Yeah, probably in the bushes.
Well, I don't think she went in the bushes, man. Maybe she held it.
Well,
that ain't the point, man. The point is she didn't let the lady in because she had stuff in the house. Do you understand? So, wouldn't let her in. It sounds like it was beyond control, said Connolly, who had a big banner made to help find James during the search. Approached at the home on Thursday, Bill James declined to speak with an Associated Press reporter. Cassell said initial reports had James last seen walking away from the house in late April. He said along with the dogs, police visited the house several times and searched the desert with a helicopter equipped with infrared detection. Friends and family searched the nearby desert several times on foot, horseback, and with all-terrain vehicles. And they even created a Facebook page to help coordinate efforts while the family offered a $10,000 reward in hopes of finding a woman described as a peace activist who loved hiking, camping, the arts, and garbage. The,
doesn't say that, does it?
No, it doesn't say that. That was a bad joke. 9 digital billboards publicized her search. It sounds like she had a lot of people that liked her.
Yeah, I was going to say, she might not have been clean, but she had friends.
Well, I don't even know if she wasn't clean, but the woman, I don't know, man. It's a very weird, it's got to be a sickness.
Oh, now wait a minute, man. How you call it a sickness?
I can tell you it's a sickness. Anything that endangers your life like that has got to be a sickness. Well, I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, what about if a guy want to go parachuting, are you going to say he's sick?
All right, okay, I take it back. I mean, parachuting, you go into that knowing that there is a risk that the chute won't open. You are aware of the dangers. All right, you do it because there is you voluntarily sort of dance with death, but collecting crap to the extent that it collapses on you and suffocates you, I don't know.
She didn't know it was going to fall on her. All she was doing, looking for the TV guide.
We don't know she was looking for the TV guide, bud. Don't get off on the TV guide. You got people repeating that story now.
Well, what do you think she was looking for?
I don't know if she was looking for anything, man. I don't even know I don't know.
Maybe she committed suicide.
How's she going to commit suicide? She pushed this stuff over on herself?
Maybe.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Committed suicide.
Well, if you're going to kill yourself, man, it might as well be go out with a smile on your face.
Yeah. If you're buried under a lot of dog dew, I don't know if she liked it.
I don't think she collected dog dew. I think it was just the dogs crapped all through the house, and the place was so cluttered that they just gave up collecting the dog crap. I don't know, man. It sounds funky. Friends and family, they looked, then 9 digital billboards, and this, and like I said, she's got a lot of friends. And Connolly said they hired someone to hold a banner in a spot near the home where a woman reported possibly seeing James. This was certainly something that was not glossed over, Cassell said. We did everything that we could, but Connolly said she and friends think police may have botched the search, of course.
I'm trying to figure out how a body couldn't smell so bad. That's what everyone's saying. It's the million-dollar question right now.
Did you smell it, lady?
Well, I'm not a cop. You don't have to be a cop to smell a decomposing body.
The case is not completely surprising given the fact that 2-5% of Americans are chronic hoarders, said Dr. David Tolan, a hoarding expert from Hartford Hospital who co-wrote Buried in Treasures to help people who compulsively collect things. There you go. Told you it was a sickness.
I didn't disagree with you.
Every year there's at least a few deaths that can be attributed to hoarding, he said. All right, we'll be right back to talk more about this story. The lady piled the garbage. She died from garbage falling on her. Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
You know, this is nuts. I mean, this whole hoarding story here, it brings to mind, obviously, the eccentricities of certain people. And we live in a fascinating world, obviously, and there's all kinds of people. Some people are just different, but they're not dangerous. Some people are different, and they're only dangerous to themselves. You know, we think so much about the actual active threats in our world to each and every one of us, and as a society, as a community, we guard against it. We bind and gird together to keep those forces away. But what of the people who are in our midst who would never hurt a fly, but they're just weird? They're just weird. And they live with us, and they hoard, and they wind up hurting themselves, or maybe they never hurt. There's a story. And this is an example. You know, I'm always bringing you these stories from World War II, but we'll update it too, because I want to tell you a little bit about Grey Gardens, not the freaking movie with Jessica Lange. I mean the documentary. You got to see this. But in Paris, at the end of the war, when the city was freed and the people were celebrating, they were also doing one other thing. They were looking for collaborators. The city of Paris finally had the shackles of the Nazis thrown off. The American troops, the French, the Free French troops, the British were pouring into the city. It was a city that was partying. I mean, it was nonstop party. Wine bottles were being uncorked, and there were literally stories of women throwing themselves at every soldier they saw. And it was just one big happy time. But there's one other thing they were doing. They were looking for the people that collaborated. They were shaving the heads of the women who had associated with German officers. They were grabbing the known collaborators and dragging them through the streets, putting them in stockades. I mean, and there is a very, very sad story of a man who wasn't a collaborator, but he was just weird. This cat lived on a street in Paris and walked around in a three-cornered hat, dressed like it was the 18th century. The guy wore those breech pants. He wore those buckle shoes. He wore a long tail coat. He had a three-corner hat on, and you'd swear the guy was Thomas Jefferson or something, walking down the street. And he had a harpsichord in his house, and he was just a strange man. Never hurt a soul, but a very eccentric old guy. And as fate would have it, and human nature being what human nature is, this poor guy was grabbed by the resistance, the Maquis, and the people of France that were looking for collaborators, and dragged into the street and beaten. I mean, almost to death. For no other reason than, this guy's got to be bad. Any guy walking around looking like that, he's got to be bad.
Well, I mean, what's he doing dressed like that? You could think he's going to be a Nazi.
Why would you think that, bud?
Yeah, just because the guy dressed like that?
Well, what's he dressed all weird for?
Because he's weird, man. Just like you're weird.
But I'm not weird. I'm not dressed all like I got a hat like that.
I'm just telling you, man, just because a guy's weird doesn't mean that he's a Nazi. But this poor man was victimized by the times as much by the people. The people of Paris were pissed. And anybody that had helped the Nazis, anybody that even suspected they were going to take that son of a gun and they were going to treat, you know. And so, you know, the strange people among us, oftentimes we use that as an excuse to say they're a threat. So here is an old lady, and she didn't threaten anybody. She just collected crap. And these people had hoarded, man. I was telling the guys, you know, before the hour started during the news, I told you guys, remember my friend Rich Driscoll?
Yeah, his grandma.
His grandmother, I'll never forget, Rich and I, you know, we were teenagers. And Rich is living in Boston right now, as a matter of fact. Rich, if you're listening, we were teenagers, and his dad hired us. He said, I'll pay you guys $50 or whatever to move Rich's grandmother from her home to, I think it might have been a retirement home. I can't remember now. One thing I remember about that move is we moved a piano. I never thought in my life that I would ever be able to move. We moved a piano down three flights of stairs.
Like Laurel and Hardy.
It was harder than what Laurel and Hardy had to do, man. I mean, we were going down flights of stairs, you know, one flight, two flight. But the goofiest thing about this move is this woman, a little old lady, and she didn't have a whole lot that she needed, but my God, when we got into the basement, everything, man, she saved everything.
Like what you have, man?
She had, Rich's dad went to Stanford. She had every football program from every football game that they ever had while his dad was going there. And she had all the yearbooks. She had all the newspapers. She had it seemed like the woman saved every newspaper and every magazine that came out from 1931 all the way on up to when we were moving the stuff. And it was good. And the first thing you say is, well, we can throw this stuff out. You know, you're thinking, oh, this is going to be easy, man. All we got to do is pull up the dumpster, throw this crap, and oh, no, she wants that. Huh? Yeah, you guys have to move. I got to move all those. You're going to have to move all that stuff and all those magazines and all those newspapers and all of those, these little colored bottles with nothing in them. Yes, move all of that. And all of these shot glasses that say like Albuquerque. No, yes, move all of that. And these cheap snow globes from the alligator garden. And yeah, move that. I don't know why they're selling snow globes from Florida, but move it. Move it. And what about the water skier? Yeah, move all that. Come on, let's go. Move it all. And I'm telling you, it was one hell of a $50.
even in way back in the olden times when you moved it, it probably wasn't enough, huh?
Yeah, way back in the olden times, man, yeah.
When did you move it, man?
1970.
That's olden times.
All right, so it's the olden times. $50 still wasn't enough. It might have been an olden time money. Speaking of hoarders, there's another group, a couple of guys, the Collier Brothers. Somebody on Twitter sent us the story of the Collier Brothers. You talk about a couple of weird cats. All right, we're coming back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, a Hitler quote in a high school yearbook. And would you rather be smarter, skinnier, younger, or richer, or uglier?
Phil Henry.
I vote for uglier.
Yeah, me too.
All right, now I got a story I do want to read to you, and it's the story of the brothers. I was telling you about these two brothers, the Collier brothers, who were famous hoarders. And I'm reading from Wikipedia, and so the veracity of this is relative, whether it's true. I'm sorry, Wikipedia, but I've actually had people say this to me with a straight face. I got it off of Wikipedia, which means what? I shouldn't believe it? Wikipedia is far from being a source. If all you're using is Wikipedia, friend, you're in deep, deep, dark doo-doo. Get yourself two or three other sources, then maybe. However, in the interest of time, we will trust Wikipedia. The Collier brothers were two American brothers who became famous because of their snobbish nature, the filth in their home, and their compulsive hoarding. For decades, neighborhood rumors swirled around the rarely seen unemployed men in their home at 2078 Fifth Avenue at the corner of 128th Street in Manhattan, where they obsessively collected newspapers, books, furniture, musical instruments, and many other items. Get this, with booby traps set up in corridors and doorways to protect against intruders.
What are you talking about, man? They want to save it?
I guess. Both of them are obviously mentally ill, you know?
Well, you gotta be, man. You gotta be like crazy. They think people are gonna bust in and steal their garbage?
Now, both were eventually found dead in the Harlem brownstone, where they had lived as hermits, surrounded by over 130 tons of waste that they amassed over several decades. They were the sons of Herman Collier, a Manhattan gynecologist who worked at Bellevue Hospital, and Susie Gage Frost, a former opera singer. The parents were first cousins. Aha!
What?
The parents were first cousins?
Oh, man. Yeah, that explains it.
There you go. There you go.
I don't get it. Oh.
For you people didn't see on the radio, because I was moving my eyes together closely.
Yeah. That means inbred.
No kidding. The parents were first cousins. Well, that did it.
Yeah, that probably made the brains kind of yak the brain up or something, you know?
Maybe. You know, I'm actually being facetious a little bit. I don't know whether that's actually going to cause mental retardation.
Are you nuts or something, man? It's like marrying your sister. That's going to make these guys all weird and live in garbage.
Right, bud, yeah.
What are you talking about, man?
What are you laughing at?
I don't know, man. It's just the fact that they married their first cousin, so that's going to make you want to live in garbage if you're their kid. Anyway, the Collier family traced its roots to a ship that supposedly arrived in America from England a week after the Mayflower. Oh, that's where all the weird asses were on that ship, huh?
Yeah, I bet if they said the Mayflower, you go ahead and we'll follow, but we got to stop off and get something, man. Maybe they dropped acid or something.
Yeah, they probably were the acid heads.
I don't know, but that sounds really creepy, man. The Collier family traced its roots to a ship that's... Like it means anything. And I think the guy that wrote this article for Wikipedia, you know, said, this is significant. You know, the fact that these guys were hoarders and lived, I mean, the old man was a gynecologist. He was a doctor. The mother was an opera singer. I mean, that's pretty, I would say, accomplished at two very accomplished fields. Doctor, opera singer. These two brothers are living in a garbage pit. Why? Because mother and dad were first cousins, and the family arrived not on the Mayflower, but on the ship that came a week later.
Well, what do you think it means?
I don't know, bud. Let's read on. It was a ship that arrived a week after the Mayflower. I think that, you know, see, this is what I mean. It could be a joke for all I know, although the guy's got it, it's footnoted it. The family was descended from the Livingston family, huh?
Is that the guy that said Dr. Livingston, I presume?
Maybe. The Livingston family, an old and well-established New York family with roots going back to the 18th century. The couple had a daughter, Susan, who died as an infant in 1880. The following year, on November the 6th, 1881, they had their first son, Homer Lusk. And in 1885, Langley was born. They were living in a tenement while Herman interned at Bellevue. As a child, Homer attended PS 69. At the age of 14, he was accepted to the College of the City of New York as a sub-freshman, earning his bachelor's degree 6 years later. So far, so good, huh?
Yeah.
Both sons attended Columbia University, which had just relocated to its present-day Morningside Heights campus, about a 20-minute walk from the Collier house. Homer obtained a degree in admiralty law, while Langley claimed a degree in engineering, though Columbia University states it had no records of his attendance. Aha! There's another one.
Yeah. First there's the cousins of the parents. Now, this guy didn't even go to the school he says he went to.
I don't know. They said they got no records. And they made it and made an attempt at being an inventor, this guy Langley. Langley played concert-level piano and had long, flowing hair, which was rare in this era. There's a picture of him. Now, this is 1942, and for a guy to have long hair back in those days, it was pretty weird. Over the years, as both brothers' eccentricities intensified, Langley tinkered with various inventions, such as a device to vacuum the inside of pianos and a Model T Ford adapted to generate electricity. Dr. Herman Collier, with his wife and two sons, moved into their residence in Harlem in 1909, when Harlem was an upper-class neighborhood. Now, of course, it's black people. Now, anyway...
Oh, you're going to get in trouble for that.
Well, that's what the inference is. Oh, see, whites were living there, so... You know, it ain't that Harlem is not so much a good neighborhood. It's a black neighborhood. Anyway, when it was an upper... Well, they are saying upper-class. Maybe they're talking about, like, really high-rolling people. Quickly becoming home to some of New York's wealthier residents. I'm not going to read this whole stupid article. What the hell am I doing?
You got to move on, man.
Anyway, these two, read up on it yourself, the Collier brothers, whose parents were first cousins.
Well, you shouldn't be prejudiced.
Oh, get out of here, will you? I thought it was illegal to marry your cousin.
I don't know. I didn't even try looking at me.
Yeah, what about that, Robert? Isn't it illegal to marry your cousin?
Shut up, man. I didn't marry my cousin.
Yeah, really? How come?
Will you shut up, bud? If you're going to tell a joke, don't sit there going, how come?
Why not?
Because if you've got the punchline, you know, timing's everything, man.
Yeah, you blew it, man. Oh, how come? You're trying to say something funny.
I was going to say something funny, and then Phil told me to shut up.
Well, you're all hubgum. How come? Did you have something to say?
I was thinking about it.
Well, then you had nothing to say. Four in ten Americans... offered the option of... Now, what? This is a no-brainer, man. I could have given them the answer to this one. 4 in 10 Americans offered the option of getting richer, thinner, younger, or smarter. What do you think they opted for?
Money.
Yeah, I say money.
You're right, money. No kidding. That's only 40%, though, but that's the majority of people. 44% of those polled said they would select richer as their choice. Because if you think about it, man, money, I don't want to say money is where it's at, but money does buy you the freedom to have all the other things. If you want to get smarter, if you want to get thinner, if you want to get cuter, if you want to get fatter, if you want to, you know.
Yeah, but some stuff money don't buy.
Oh, get out of here. You're talking about love? You want to know something, man? I bet you if you're rich, you have a better opportunity at finding love.
How do you say that?
Because if you're rich... Women are attracted to guys with money, let's face it, you know? And so you're going to have more of an opportunity to meet women, and the odds of you finding a woman that you love will go up.
No.
Yeah.
No, because what if you're rich and you stay inside all the time?
Well, if you're rich and you stay inside all the time, then I guess you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to have all the money in the world, but what if you're a hermit, like this guy?
Like these two clowns that were descended from the cousins?
Yeah.
Then I guess you're a weird ass, and you got all the money in the world, but you ain't going anywhere.
See?
Yeah, that's right. You proved your point. Not.
Well, you just said.
I'm talking about somebody that's got all their marbles, okay? Another 12% in the Adweek Media Harris Poll survey of 2,163 adults said they would prefer to be younger. The remaining 9% opted to stay the same and not change. Ha 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 ha, liar. The answers skewed differently between the sexes and the generations. Among men, just 14% chose thinner, while 29% of women said they prefer to lose weight because women are judged more on their looks than men are. Age was less of an issue for the ladies. Just 8% said they would choose younger compared to 16% of the men, because the older a man gets, the more challenging it is for him in terms of career, and career is basically the ego of men. Wealth was most appealing to people aged 35 to 44, with more than half making it their number one choice. It was least appealing to folks 55 and older, because people 55 and older have either made their money or they don't care anymore, I guess. I don't know. I still like money. I'm 57. I love money. Love it, and I want to hoard it, and I hope I'm buried under it, and I die in a pile of it. Now,
really?
No, not really. Although, you know,
there's worse ways.
One in five of those over the age of 55 picked younger compared to just 12% of those 35 to 44. Gee, I wonder why.
Why?
Because if you're younger, man.
If you're younger, man, you're going to pick younger.
Anyway, the group most interested in getting smarter, the 18 to 34 set, with 16% opting for brains. So the 18 to 34-year-olds think they need to be smarter. That's smart.
They're already smart.
It shows that you guys are already smart, yeah, because you want to be smart. All right, and speaking of smart, maybe this wasn't so smart, but I think I kind of get where these kids were coming from, having not even read the story, and I understand the people that were upset with this, but let's just go through this together. It's a fascinating story, and I think it also is reflective of the out-of-the-box way that young people are going to think. That's where kids live, man. They live in that place called out-of-the-box because they've seen the way it's been done. Now they want to do something else. Here's a student named Gabriel, and here is the principal, Michael Koch. They talk to CBS News in Philadelphia, and they talk about the quote that appeared in their high school yearbook, Easton Area High School, Philadelphia, and the quote is the following quote, "And in the last analysis, success is what matters." It's a pretty good quote.
Yeah.
The only problem is they're quoting Adolf Hitler. Here is what Gabriel and Principal Michael Koch said.
I was just surprised that it got through and went through our editors and got onto our yearbook.
It was an oversight by our yearbook advisor, you know, during the editing process as well as the administrative team.
I have a bet that somebody said, you know what, let's put that quote in. And someone else said, no, we can't because it's Hitler. And they said, yeah, but it's an interesting perspective coming from a reviled and hated man, that even a guy like that would say something like that. And then there was probably a discussion as to whether he actually said that or was that taken contextually from something else. But students from Easton Area High School are talking about more than just Monday's first day of class. They're talking about a quote by Adolf Hitler from the 2010 yearbook. It is, in fact, a quote from Hitler, and it was selected from numerous quotes in various sources. This, according to Michael Koch, who's the Easton Area High School principal. The quote reads, "And in the last analysis, success is what matters." It is true. Hitler didn't have too much of that, though, did he? Koch says,
"Yeah, a lot of it."
He didn't have a lot of it, not for the stuff he said he was going to do. I ain't going to go through this again, okay? So Koch says printing the quote in the yearbook was a mistake and an oversight by the administration, as you just heard him say. He says someone from a local newspaper notified him about the quote earlier this week. "We will have closer revision next time to ensure nothing like this happens again." This is August. When do yearbooks usually come out?
Yeah, they come out in the spring, man. How come it took so long?
I don't know, man. Unless there was a delay or unless this is when their 2010 yearbook comes out at the beginning of the 2010, semester, as opposed to at the end of the 2010 fall semester as opposed to the winter or spring. When Channel 3 in Philadelphia asked students and parents how they felt about the error, many said they don't think the quote was posted with malicious intent. "I think considering the size of the school, mistakes happen. It could bypass people," said parent Linda Leichleiter. "I mean, I don't know why they put it in there," said 12th grader Andriana Fennell. "I'm sure they didn't mean it in a bad way." Anytime you quote Adolf Hitler, man, you don't have the best of intentions.
Well, what do you mean, man? I mean, you said it was a good quote.
It's a good quote, man. It's something that anybody would say who is intent on having success. But when you quote Adolf Hitler, you could have quoted Dale Carnegie, for crying out loud. You could have, I'll bet you...
George Washington?
Maybe George Washington said that. And in the last analysis, success is what matters.
Yeah, probably Jesus said that.
Jesus? Well, I don't know if Jesus said that, but it doesn't sound like Jesus. You know,
Pythagoras.
Will you shut up? Anyway, when you quote Adolf Hitler, Jack, you mean it in a bad way. Don't give me this crap about I'm sure they didn't mean it bad. All right, we're coming back here on the Phil Henry Show. Boy, this is Saturday morning. Yes! Passengers on a flight are mistakenly told they're going to crash. All right. 877-876-PHIL, our website, philhenryshow.com.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
So anyway, I said I would just update you because the movie came out. They turned it into a theatrical release, you know. By the way, this is the Phil Henry Show. Welcome back. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along the way here with me. Now, Grey Gardens is a movie that Jessica Lange did with, there was another actress, and it's a true story. It's based upon two women, Big Edie or Edith Ewing Bouvier-Beale and the daughter, Edith Little Edie Bouvier-Beale. This better be good. Drew Barrymore, that's great, thanks. I don't care.
Well, I just want to know.
I don't care. I would not recommend seeing Jessica Lange and Drew Barrymore in Grey Gardens because nothing is better than the documentary of the real women themselves that was made by the Maisley brothers, Albert and David, who made Gimme Shelter, the Rolling Stone Altamont film. The documentary... filmmakers, and this film that they made of these two women, your jaw will be on the floor through the whole movie. You won't believe it. You won't believe it. I'm telling you. First of all, these are Bouviers. You know, Jackie Kennedy, well, that's her maiden name, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy. So they were part of that whole family. Now, the family buys this house. Joseph Greenleaf Thorpe is the father. He marries... Phelan Beale, that's the father. He marries Edith Beale. They move into this house. They have the house. They have the daughter, who is Little Edie, as they call her. And the father commences to have an affair and leaves the wife and daughter for another woman. Now, apparently, while Little Edie, the daughter, goes off to make her fame and fortune in New York, the mother lives on at this house built in 1897. And where is this thing located, man? Oh, yeah, East Hampton, New York, in the wealthy Georgica Pond neighborhood. Now, you're watching this movie, and I'm watching this flick, and I'm going, well, okay, is these two rich? Wait a minute, they're not really, well, they sort of are rich. Wait, is that a hole in the wall that I see and a raccoon that she's feeding? And the kitchen looks like a big kitchen, but it's got, there's paper plates, and they're serving wine with the screw cap, and there's something wrong with these two women. And as you watch this movie, you realize they're living in what was once a really beautiful home, but has fallen into disrepair. One of the reasons being the handyman died, and these two women are so insular and so, unsocial, that they never really connected with the world in a normal way. So this house falls into disrepair. They're living in this thing increasingly with stacks of garbage every place. This is the Bouvier family, a wealthy family. Jacqueline Kennedy at some point in the early 1970s, I think it was right after the documentary came out, and saw how her relatives were living, paid to have the garbage hauled away. The tab was 30 G's.
Are you kidding me?
That was the tab to haul the garbage out of this house. $30,000. But they continued owning this house, and it was the two of these women living together in this world of memory. They were remembering the good times in New York City. They were remembering friends that Little Edie had. They were remembering the famous people that they knew. At one point, some Obviously, a well-heeled couple comes to visit them, and they're serving them off of paper plates and screw cap wine. And little Edie is out of her mind because she never goes anywhere without this really tight, like almost like a swimming cap style hat she wears everywhere, man.
Maybe she got no hair.
I don't know. And then, like, in the middle of the night, she puts on marching music and starts marching around the house with a baton. Now, you may think they're crazy. That's the first thing. Well, they're obviously, they're nuts. They're functionally nuts. But after Big Edie dies, Little Edie leaves. She lives in New York for a while. She moves to Miami. And the end of the movie is the audio of a phone call between David Maisley and Little Edie. And they're talking. And this is 2000-something. And she's talking about her life now in Bal Harbor. And she's obviously older, and she's obviously still weird, but she's not nuts. She lived on her own after her mother died. She moved from New York back to Florida. And she's obviously got a thing for David Maisley, who was one of the filmmakers, because she's saying, oh, David, I wish you and I would have gotten together. I mean, it's out there, man. You got to see the documentary.
Okay, what's it called?
Grey Gardens.
Spell that.
I'm not going to spell that.
Here, man, right there.
Spell it. Show is produced by Jason Rance, our technical director, Charles Wagon, and our associate producer this evening, screener John Werick. Thanks, John. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget, philhendryshow.com for all your radio needs. Later and greater, see you Monday. And don't forget, Sunday night, Phil.